KIRO FM HD2 Tacoma. The Pete Carroll Show, Mondays at 9:30.
The Matt Hasselbeck Show, every Wednesday from 9 to 10.
You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good time?
Well, that's what we thought yesterday. Thought we were ready for a good time. We were. 30 minutes of a great time.
I was very, very ready for a good time. First game back. I was psyched.
Justin was there. 300 level.
300 with my people.
With your peeps.
Well, we had a good time for one half. Right.
I had a good time for 30 minutes. Yeah. It was a good time.
It was an act in three parts.
Don't start getting greedy. Oh, you wanted 60 minutes. Now, it's interesting, you two, Justin Barnes, Maura Dooley. I remember a conversation last week all about, you know, when you could win the game and could you do it in the first quarter or perhaps even the second quarter. I was thinking you were like Bruce Irvin yelling, hell no, in the background, third quarter. Because I'm pretty sure you can't win the game until the fourth quarter or maybe even overtime. Yeah. And yet, I heard a lot of crowing last week about what importance of the first quarter and the second quarter and starting fast and this, that, and the other. And they did that. In fact, I'm pretty sure I saw a 15-point lead in the second half for the Seahawks yesterday. But no, it was not to be. Because as it turns out, you do need to win the game in the fourth quarter. Yeah. Pete's right. Pete's usually right. And every time you think Pete's not right, there's
a decent
chance.
Or just not lose it in the fourth.
Well, you know, you can't lose the game in the fourth quarter. And that's what they did.
Yeah, your text was well received. I got it and I showed it to my buddy. And I was like, no, I know he's going to make me eat the L on this one.
We're going to have to. Yeah, when do we do that? Tomorrow at what time? 7:30? When is our L eating competition? That's tomorrow. I'm excited already.
Competition. I'm excited. So far, you are very, very, very much ahead in that competition.
I'm excited for our L eating competition. Tomorrow to see who can eat larger and bigger L's. It's a too bad, man. It's really a shame, and we got a bunch of things to talk about today. Honestly, halfway through the game, I'm like thinking Super Bowl. I really was. I allowed my thoughts to drift. I was getting greedy. I was thinking, okay, where is the Super Bowl this year? Are we gonna get to go? Usually, if the Seahawks are in the Super Bowl, we get to travel. That's another time I can go to a warm climate in February instead of being here in Seattle, which is really how my mind works most of the time. And then all of a sudden, it all came crashing back down. And I know that there's going to be folks blaming the defense today. They don't get off the hook, surely. This is a total team collapse. Let's be clear. Total team collapse. Offense, defense, special teams all played a role to different extents. Special teams will be the smallest piece of that pie. But all three, coaching, Everybody gets to take the L. This is a joint L in the L eating competition tomorrow. The Seahawks get one large round L. Okay, the big circle around it, maybe a check mark.
Feel less alone.
Yeah, they all get L's. But I'm going to put this one more on the offense than the defense. I'm going to put this more squarely on the offense than defense. D has its issues. Don't get me wrong. There were definitely issues on the defense, but I'm going to disagree with Russell Wilson, who I don't know. He's not excuse making. Let's be clear, but I would disagree with this.
All talk about it, you know, what can we do better as and groups and stuff like that or whatever. I think we did a good job. I think, you know, listen. I mean, we scored 30 points or whatever. That's a chance to win that game, you know, and they made some plays. You know, that's really what it comes down to. A good football team against us, and we're a good one too. We knew it was going to be a battle. We knew it was going to be a tough fight. We had a feeling that it was going to be a long, drawn-out game, that we may not even get the ball all the time just because, you know, how they play football, and they're going to hand it off quite a bit. I'm not sure how many runs he had there, but, you know, they give it to him quite a bit. And so, you know, when we capitalized, we capitalized in a good way.
Well, no. I'm just going to disagree with Russ, and I love Russ, and this hurts me, as I'm sure you know. It pains me deep inside to disagree with my guy. Mm. But let's disagree with a few things. Yes, you did score 30 points, but 7 of them were gifted to you by the defense. Came on a sack fumble inside the 10. 7 more were gifted on a busted coverage in the third quarter. So, yes, you did score 30 points, but 14 of them, now they don't take away. You still scored the points, but if you're placing, because there's a little bit of, hey, we scored 30, we did our thing, they made plays. Well, you did, yes. But 7 of those came from the defense, and 7 of them came from a bizarre busted coverage. Howdy, who hates Freddie Swain, just thinks he was a wasted pick, so I always give him grief whenever Freddie Swain does anything, said that Freddie Swain was so irrelevant that the Titans forgot about him on that play. His irrelevance played into his advantage. I don't know if that's the case. But
I'm not going to lie. I messed up and thought it was Lockett.
You know, it was number 18.
I tweeted it, and then people told me.
You guys got to have more respect.
I looked up real quick, said, oh, Lockett did it again, and then no.
That's big play Freddie Swain
from the,
right there.
From the 300 level, it also looked like Lockett.
Oh, no, that's big play Freddie Swain. He's like twice Lockett's size. Anyway, no, I'm going to say that this is on the offense, for, and I'm going to put it squarely on two drives. Russell's right about one thing. You're only going to get so many opportunities. And they had two opportunities to win this game. Two very specific chances for Russell Wilson and this offense to win the game. The first came with about 6 minutes left in the game. They're up a score. All you need is one score of any kind. You put the game away. Just get on and kick a field goal. You don't need a touchdown. You got the ball. You got 6 minutes left. You're at around your own 30, 35-yard line, something like that. And all you got to do is go down and kick a field goal. Put the game away. Here's what you do on that drive. Chris Carson, a run up the middle for 2 yards. Russell, a quick incompletion. It was like a little pressure up the middle, and he just basically threw it away right away, an uncatchable ball. Russ hit DK for 7 when you needed 9 or 8. Then you line up like maybe you're going to go for it inside your own 40, and then you false start. I'm pretty sure they were going to end up taking the delay of game anyway, or worse yet, call timeout for no reason. So, all right, that's what you do in your first opportunity to win the game. Then the defense, which is now completely gassed, ends up giving up the touchdown. I can't believe Mike Vrabel didn't go for 2. I am legitimately shocked he didn't go for 2.
I saw your tweet on that, and I thought for a second the same thing.
Why wouldn't he? You'd think that the Seahawks were going to stop Derrick Henry in that spot? No chance. No chance. No chance. No chance. No chance.
I think Mina Kimes agreed with you, and she's pretty big into crunching the numbers on that kind of stuff.
I don't need to see the numbers, although I'm sure Mina's crunched them and done it accurately. Well, she's much smarter than I am. I don't need to see the numbers. You know what I can do? Watch the game.
Yeah, well, and I think Mike Vrabel's been aggressive in that situation in the past, so it was confusing.
Well, maybe he had so little respect for the Seahawks offense at that point. They said, doesn't matter. I mean, I don't respect the defense, but I don't respect the offense even more. They're not going to score on me. And he was right. It certainly worked out. The second opportunity came after they did stop the Titans in overtime. They lost the coin toss. They stopped the Titans, and they get the ball back, not with great field position, but okay, you get the ball back. You don't need a touchdown. You have all the time in the world. I expect an elite franchise quarterback to win the game. That's what you get paid for. That's literally what you get paid for. I believe in quarterback wins.
Everybody in the stadium agreed with you.
Well, I'm sure. I hope so. I hope they did.
Everyone's like, here we go. Well, I felt a breath.
I'm sure Mina will disagree with me on this. Well, maybe we agree on what the Titans should have done. She probably, would be my guess, is not a big quarterback record person. In my book, record is the single most important stat for quarterbacks. They're not pitchers. Quarterbacks are the most in control of that. And you get wins and losses in the NFL generally based on what happens at the ends of games. I know that you guys want to win the game in the first, second, or third quarter, but the reality is most NFL games come down to the final few minutes and what you do in the final few drives. Most, not all, most, regardless of what's happened in the first three and a half quarters. The ends of games matter more, and the best quarterbacks do their best in those spots. It's why Tom Brady is the GOAT. Yeah, he's got the yards, he's got all the other stuff, but he's the GOAT for what he does at the ends of games. And that's where I expect Russell Wilson to deliver. Well, in his two big chances, and I'll give him the final possession of overtime. They didn't have a chance, down 28 seconds or whatever it was. In his big moment in overtime, he gets the ball and throws an uncatchable pass to Tyler Lockett on the sideline, an uncatchable pass 12 feet over DK Metcalf's head, which is hard to do. He's pretty tall. And then nearly takes a safety and ends up getting sacked inside the one, leading to a short punt and ultimately game over. That's your big moment? Now, that's going to sit on his shoulders. Shane Waldron's going to take part of it, obviously. He's the one who called those plays. But that's your ball game. Throw out everything else that happened in this game. Throw out the 200 yards rushing and the 180-something from Derrick Henry. Throw out all of it. If you score on either of those two possessions late in the game, you win. That's NFL football. At its core. At its very, very basic core. You got to score in one of two late-game situations, needing only a field goal. I understand the NFL gets tougher when you drive it down and you got to score a touchdown. They didn't. They didn't need a touchdown. They needed a field goal in either of those two possessions, and they got bubkus. And in fact, went so far backwards on the second one, they set up the L. If we're eating L's, they set up the L. That's like a little amuse-bouche appetizer for the L. Let's take a little almost safety and have to punt on an 11-yard snap instead of 15. That's a mess, man. And that's going to go on the offense. Defense, yeah, you don't get a passing grade. But the offense, to me, you're going to be the one that is in the spotlight this week. So a lot more on this to come. We'll tell you the three things you need to know, including, I know things are kind of negative and bad today, but I will put a smile on my face for one big reason. We'll tell you what that is. Next, Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
It'll be a conversation with Pete Carroll this morning at 9:30. You'll want to hear. I don't know whether the tone will be quite the same as last week. Pete was pretty upbeat. But Pete's an even-keel guy. He'll get it right back together. This is one loss. I mean, let's not get carried away. It's a bad one. The way you blew it at the end, it's kind of a gut punch. But this is not the end of the world. You got to find a way back from this. It is 6:15. Time for Need to Know.
Need to Know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, fans overjoyed to return to Lumen Field this weekend, but they did not leave that way. Seahawks blew a two-score lead in the second half, wasted their opportunity in overtime before finally succumbing to Tennessee. 33-30, your final score. Gave up more than 200 yards on the ground, 182 of them, to Derrick Henry, who really did dominate in the second half and overtime. They'd held him in check early, but eventually, that guy just broke free. Added three touchdowns on the day, including the tying score with 29 seconds left to play. Seahawks offense did next to nothing after halftime. Mustered just 6 points in the second half and overtime combined. Both their running and passing game looked completely out of sync, and that obviously a major difference from what we saw last week when everything looked complete, everything looked balanced. In this game, they didn't have any of that. The only balance they had is an inability to move the ball in any way in the second half. Look, in short, this game was just lost up front. I mean, we can blame offense, defense, and I will. I'm going to put a lot of this on Russell Wilson and what happened in overtime. But up front, neither line was able to accomplish its goals. Defensive line allowed Henry to run wild. The offensive line never got the running game on track. And with all that said, Russell does have the ball in overtime, needing just a field goal, and not only didn't deliver, he essentially cost them the game by going backwards. Two uncatchable passes, followed by a near safety that made field position just impossible. That is not what any of us expect from one of the game's best in that situation, period. And while I'll continue to believe the next time Russell gets the ball in overtime, he will do better than that because that's what his reputation is and that's what I'll expect. This one is a black mark on the resume, the same way last year's game against the Giants was also. He had chances to win that game at the end. When Russell Wilson has the ball, needing a field goal especially, I expect him to find ways to win. Couldn't get that done yesterday.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, I want some good news. Standings be damned. Mariners will just not give up, of course. Not a surprise if you've watched this team this year. They did get some measure of revenge on Kansas City this weekend. The two wins, both keyed by none other than young star Jared Kelnick, who simply went off. 5 for 7, 3 home runs, 2 doubles, a walk, and 7 driven in, and he only started 2 of the 3 games. Wow. This is the player we've been waiting to see. We've only really gotten flashes of him so far this year. A good weekend against one team does not foretell the entire future. That I understand. But it does sure help to be reminded of why he's one of the top prospects in the game and why his future is deemed to be as bright as he is. Meanwhile, Logan Gilbert, dominant on Sunday, went 7 strong innings, allowed just 1 run on 3 hits. So good to see the two kids who were called up for the first time on the same day, 2 of the major forces in this rebuild, showing why their future is what it is. Mariners do unfortunately remain 4 games back. As the Red Sox and Jays just keep winning, 4 in Oakland starts tonight. Couple of lefties get it started. Tyler Anderson against Sean Manaea.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, the NFC West remains perfect other than the Seahawks, Niners, Rams, and eventually the Cardinals all won. Arizona beat next week's opponent, the Vikings, as Minnesota missed a 38-yard kick at the end of the game. Sound familiar? It wasn't even freezing cold there. 34-33 the final. Kyler Murray threw for 400 more yards on 29 of 36 passing. He has become a problem and showing why he was the number one overall pick a couple of years ago. Rams got a scare from Indy. Ultimately hold on as Carson Wentz just couldn't go on the game's final series. Trailing by 3 with a chance to tie, it was none other than UW's Jacob Eason who took the snap. If you thought Russ was bad at the end, yikes. Two plays later, he had thrown an incomplete pass and then an interception to Jalen Ramsey, and that pretty well sealed the deal. Thanks for playing, Jacob. San Francisco outlasted Philadelphia 17-11. Ugly defensive game. Nick Bosa did have two sacks. So that's your trip around the NFC West where everybody wins. If you want to take a look at the college world, pretty good game for the Huskies. They get right. Dominate Arkansas State 52-3. Dylan Morris with 367 yards, three touchdowns. Did still have two picks. Sam Heward got in late, 2 of 5 for 31 yards. And the Cougs did lead 14-0. If you think the Seahawks blew a 15-point lead, at least they only lost in overtime. The Cougs were up 14-0 and lost 45-14. How is that even possible? They played three quarterbacks. Jaden Delora seems better than the other two, but I guess he had some injury concerns. Those are three things you need to know.
Did you see the second or third string quarterback at USC? What was his name?
Well, kid who started? He's got the greatest name in the history of quarterbacks. Yeah, Jackson Dart?
Jackson Dart. He wasn't the third. Yes.
Dude, Jackson Dart. Now, a couple things on Jackson Dart. First of all, obviously, he was born to play quarterback.
Yes.
He's right out of a movie. He's either like a quarterback or like...
like the villain in Brink.
He could be a villain. I was thinking he could also be like a fighter pilot.
Oh, yeah. Fighter pilot would be a good one. Yeah.
But not the star, like the Iceman version, like the other fighter pilot. Oh, we got to go against Jackson Dart. He also had the strangest eye black thing I've ever seen. Did you see what he did with his eye black? Were you watching? So I watched some of that game in and out of sleep. Brock did a great job, of course. But he only had eye black on his right eye, and it wasn't horizontal, it was vertical. He had one vertical black stripe from his right eye down his cheek.
Intentionally? It wasn't like he wiped it that way?
Well, I don't know. Maybe it didn't start that way, but what? Either the one had to be intentional unless he forgot. I don't know. I've never seen that.
Just love that name.
Jackson Dart. Jackson Dart. Can someone explain the single eye black down the right side?
Well, I know that it's a thing to do to cross, and it kind of looks like it's a pull down instead of the
horizontal
line. Oh, so
you think it was
line.
That? Oh, I guess that's
a pretty common
on just
thing.
One side?
Yes. But I know the cross out of the eye black is pretty common.
Well, I've seen the cross. I don't know. Maybe that's what this was. I've never seen it on just one. I would feel like that would be super distracting to have that on one side but not the other. Especially as a righty quarterback, wouldn't you mostly be looking to your left and therefore need the black on the left side?
I've never really thought the eye black stuff worked.
It doesn't work? Of course it does. It has to block out the glare. You can't play without that stuff.
Yeah, that's it.
You absolutely have to have it. All right, well, that's Jackson Dart. I do want to go around the NFL. There were some games yesterday, man, and obviously what we saw in this division was great. Some of the quarterback issues were great. But what we saw last night on the final important play of a huge day of football should be a message to the Seahawks and everyone on their coaching staff. It's next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Text message from 360. Tom Brady's made a legend of himself by nickel and diming the heck out of teams and checking his ego at the door when it comes to the long ball. Russ is way too enamored with his press clippings when it comes to the deep ball. Sometimes the right thing to do is just move the chains. That might be a little harsh for me, but I understand the sentiment. There was a third and short call, 3rd and 3. I thought it was Jeremy Bates had been back at offensive coordinator as they decided to go that little fade go route to DK Metcalf down the left sideline. I don't understand that play. I never have, and I know sometimes it works, but you work so hard to get into that 3rd and short. I would so much rather see somebody schemed open rather than just counting on one of my receivers to go up and get a 50-50 ball. What was the point of getting to 3rd and 3 if you're just going to end up throwing a 50-50 ball and hoping your guy comes down with it? And DK almost made an incredible one-handed catch as he tried to go around the corner, and Russ threw the ball well. Like, nobody executed poorly on that play. I just don't understand what the point is. You've worked hard to get into 3rd and 3. Don't you then need to just scheme somebody open or let rest? Oh, there's so many other ways to pick up first downs.
Tight ends.
Yeah, the tight ends were not involved at all. We see one catch from Gerald Everett, and that was it, and that didn't go anywhere. I don't know, just a lot of the real positives that were creative in the offense from week 1 just seemed to disappear in week 2, and I don't know why. We can ask Pete. We can ask experts over the course of this week, and we'll talk to Brock. We'll talk to Clayton. I think we're going to try to talk to Jeff Schwartz this week. So there's a bunch of people I want to talk to see if we can understand why that happens. but somehow it just completely disappeared from week one to week two, and you end up with just a totally different offense. I know the defense is going to take their lumps, and they should. They were not great. I understand special teams cost you, right? You end up missing an extra point, which would have at least forced Tennessee to go for two at the end of the game, and they probably would have gotten it, but at least it would have forced them to do it also, which is harder, right? And then you end up with a short punt at the end of the game. Dixon did not have his best day, quite frankly. So, yeah, there were some errors made in all of the phases of the game, but I'm gonna drive the offense. Now, long-term, defense still concerns me more than the offense long-term. I think this stuff will get figured out. But for yesterday...
You think the offense will get figured out?
Yes, I think the offense will get figured out because I think they have more talent there, et cetera, than they do on defense. I'm more worried about what we saw at home from the defense. But for yesterday, and most specifically to this game, I would put this one much more on the offense. Your text coming in, 710-710. That's powered by Mac and Jax. We'll even hit you guys up with some phone calls later in the show. Right now, let's go around the NFL. All right, we'll start here in the NFC West. Kyler Murray is a problem, man. A big...
Yes. Really good.
A big, small problem.
Yeah.
He's a little guy, man. He's like a little water bug. Good luck catching that dude. But they escaped Minnesota with a 34-33 win. They had been down 20-7 in the second quarter. Now, they should have lost this game. Let's be clear. 38-yard field goal for, what, 31 of the teams in the NFL you assume is going to go in. But with Minnesota... Totally different ball game.
A lot of ghosts.
Lot of ghosts.
Yeah.
Lot of ghosts. Was this was in Minnesota too, right?
I don't think so. I think
it was in Arizona.
Home.
Okay. Well, they win 34-33. Kyler Murray had 400 more yards in the air. And that's in addition to everything he does with his legs. Moore was just showing me the fourth and five throw he made, which was ridiculous. I mean, just right on the money, going deep. He really, I don't know, look. It used to be that, yeah, they would be a problem for you, but you could always count on Arizona blowing a couple of dumb games every year. I don't know whether that's going to be the case. They I'm not saying they're going to go undefeated. I don't mean that. But the dumb games that you could usually count on Arizona blowing, Kyler Murray may make up for enough of the holes that that team has and the defense hadn't proved. I know that allowing 33 points yesterday didn't really show that. But, yeah, I think they have certainly earned a major role in this conversation. I think the Seahawks are a better team than they are still. I'm not going to just flip that because of what we saw yesterday, but Cardinals are definitely a problem. The Colts nearly tied the Rams. Come within a field goal in the fourth quarter. Do they get it if Carson Wentz stays in the game? I don't know. But it's certainly more likely than what we saw with Jacob Eason making his NFL debut. He looked not ready for primetime.
Tough spot, yep.
You know what he looked like? I don't know, maybe you'll disagree with this, but what I saw from Jacob Eason yesterday, as soon as he came in, you know what I saw? The same guy he was at UW.
Where are we going?
And would you want that guy facing Aaron Donald?
No, I don't want that guy on an NFL field. I mean, like, I'm not a big Jacob Eason fan, not personally. He seems like a nice kid. Not a shot at him, and I know his family's low. I watched him at UW, and at no point did I say to myself, that's an NFL quarterback. Certainly not one who's got a – and that's a tough spot for him. I have some sympathy. Yeah. He comes into the game in that moment. Yeah, Aaron Donald rushing the passer, Jalen Ramsey beating him.
Game on the
him,
line.
And unfortunately, he just was not up for the challenge at all. So they end up falling to the Rams 27-24. And then San Francisco, I watched a lot of that game yesterday. The advantage – I don't get to see any of the Huskies, but I do get to watch games like all of San Francisco because I have DirecTV. 17-11, they end up winning in Philadelphia. That was a really ugly game.
10 points in the fourth, too.
How many injuries? All of their running backs are hurt. All of them.
Yeah.
They have three running backs all hurt.
They picked up a guy named Trenton Cannon this week just to help out on special teams, and he ended up being the only healthy running back
and
yesterday.
They won. Yeah, I mean, I watched Jalen Hurts. I like Jalen Hurts, but I was not too impressed by what I saw with him throwing the ball yesterday. Obviously, his legs are fantastic, but they're not quite at the, like, you know, they're not at the Lamar Jackson level to make up for some of the issues throwing the ball. So, look, I still have high hopes for him, but it's hard to imagine Philadelphia is going to end up being a great team unless he figures out how to throw the ball a little bit better than he did yesterday. A couple of sacks for Nick Bosa in that one. All right, the game I wanted to talk a little bit about is what we saw last night. What, first of all, just a great game. Great game between Kansas City and Baltimore. I love watching those two teams play against each other. The Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson rivalry is like a little bit of a modern day Peyton and Brady, right? Where they're not on the same division, but because they both end up winning their division each year, they end up playing each other. So I thought it was great. I really enjoyed watching the two of them go back and forth. Lamar is unique, man. He's as close to Michael Vick's acceleration as we've seen since Vick. That's my opinion, especially at the quarterback spot. And it's not, he's just so slippery. Like every time you think he's down, he's kind of like moving at three-quarter speed. And then when he decides to hit the gas, dear Lord, he just all of a sudden he's 5 yards down the field and there's nothing you can do about it.
All of his weight seems to be 2 feet in front of him. He's always catching up with himself. He's always leaning. He's really interesting to watch.
He's got great forward lean.
I don't know how to explain it. He's always leaned forward and fast. He's always just ready to turn on and hit overdrive.
Well, he was really good in this one. But what I loved is what they did at the end of the game. You're playing an offense that you can't stop, right? Can we all agree that short of that fumble, you're probably not going to stop Patrick Mahomes needing a field goal late in the game? So what does he do? Inside, what, his own 40? Decides to go for it. Whatever. Our offense is better than our defense. We're going to lose. Even if we punt here, we're probably going to lose because we're giving Patrick Mahomes enough time and a timeout and a chance only needing a field goal. You can't take that chance. You got to go for it. You got Lamar Jackson. Run the ball.
And he literally yells, "Hey, Lamar, you want to go for this?"
I loved it.
It's like, of course. Could you imagine him saying no? Like, yes.
So do you think the Seahawks were going to go for it on fourth down?
I really do think they were going for it. Yeah.
I don't.
I really thought they were.
I don't think so.
And that's what the jump is what made me think they were going.
I don't think so.
Ugh.
I still don't think so.
I was all in on it. Everybody in my section was in on it. It was happening. And then they jumped. And I was like, oh, well, yeah,
I wish they had. I think that was their best chance to win the game. But I don't think they were. By the way, if they go and they get it and they drive down the field, just kick a field goal, they win the game.
Mm-hmm.
I think the difference is if the Seahawks, this is why I don't think they go for it. If the Seahawks get that first down with like, what was it, 5 minutes left or so, roughly 4.5, 5 minutes left, they don't win the game. They still need to drive down and kick a field goal. They're only at the 40. The Ravens put themselves in a spot where get that first down and you win.
Yeah, with the time.
It's over. There's nothing else that can go wrong after that. You win the game. It's automatic. It seals the victory. The Seahawks still would have needed to go down and score. I don't know whether it's worth it in that spot. So, anyway, they end up jumping themselves, so that just didn't work. Let's see what else. Around the NFL, Carson Wentz, we mentioned, rolled his ankle pretty good. Andy Dalton suffers a knee injury in the first half of Sunday's bout against his former squad, the Bengals. Did not return. He came back and then he went out again, right? He came in and then he went out and they came in again. Fields goes 6 for 13, 60 yards in his debut, so to speak. No touchdowns and interception. Did run the ball 10 times for 31 yards on the ground. I'm really high on Justin Fields and where he will be eventually. I don't know whether he's there yet. I think there's a reason they're trying to start Andy Dalton to let this kid sit a little bit, and that's okay. Based on the offense he was running in college, I of all the quarterbacks drafted this year, I might have the highest hopes for him. The one thing he's going to have to overcome is that he's the quarterback of the Chicago Bears.
Oh, sad. That's sad.
But they were on Russ's list.
Yeah.
And you put him ahead of Trey Lance?
Maybe if he'd been there, he would have done what he did yesterday. Yeah, I do.
Okay.
He did it at Ohio State in the Big Ten. Yeah. Trey Lance did it against the Sisters of the Poor. It's just different.
The Sisters of the Poor? What reference is that I don't get?
Sisters of the Poor. I don't know. It's just a thing.
Okay.
You never heard that?
No, I've never
Sisters
heard that.
That's the
first time I've heard that.
Is that not a common thing? I don't know. I feel like maybe it was my high school football coach, Rick Forster, who would always say that.
Not a lot of whispering of that in the woods
of
Montana.
There against the Sisters of the Poor.
Sisters of the Poor.
I mean, that was us for the most part. So when he was talking about it, he was mostly referring to us and how bad we were. But it's true. Yeah, no, I probably have the highest upside. Yeah, Trey Lance might have the highest upside, but I think the best chance for long-term success, I would put that with Justin Fields. Did you happen to catch his post-game interview? It was really great. He just seems like a lovely kid. I don't know how else to describe
lovely.
It. He does. He just seems like a wonderful kid. The way he talks, I forget who he was with. It wasn't Andrea Kramer, but they just had like a nice back and forth. And she was like, yeah, this is so nice doing this with you. I hope we get to do it more. And he's like, yeah, me too. I don't know. There was something about it that just appealed to me.
You said kid. I'm like, hey, he is. He's 22.
Dude, he's a 22-year-old kid.
I'm with you. I think he's super talented. And, you know, the offensive line is a little sketchy, but he can run. And they've got a really good receiver in Allen Robinson, a good up-and-coming receiver who was a rookie last year in Darnell Mooney. And David Montgomery's been a pretty good back.
I know, but they're the Bears, and they haven't had a quarterback literally in my lifetime. In my whole life. I mean, Jim McMahon is the closest they've had, and that was only like a year or two. Obviously, he won the Super Bowl, but Jim McMahon was no great shakes. He's famous because he was kind of a bad boy, and he wore the Roselle headband.
But it was more defense than Walter Payton, right?
I mean, it was not just more. It was the defense of Walter Payton. Yeah. He was just along for the ride. He had he had less to do with that Super Bowl than Trent Dilfer did with the one in Baltimore. Yeah, or Brad Johnson did for the one in Tampa. Like, he had nothing to do with it.
Can't believe you're disrespecting Rex Grossman like this, but okay.
I am. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm doing. All right, Jets rookie quarterback. Do we have some of the cut? Do we have the cut here of Zach Wilson? I thought I had it on my sheet, but I'm not seeing it here. Zach Wilson threw four interceptions for the Jets. Three in the first half against the Patriots. Fans are already booing him. Now, first of all, going against a Belichick defense as a rookie, good luck. We've seen that story before however many times over the years. Like, Belichick has his way with rookie quarterbacks, and this kid, you know, had only played one game in the league before yesterday. I was never that high on him to begin with, so this sort of is a little confirmation bias for me that, again, he's got to overcome being the Jets quarterback, which has worked out about as well as being a Bears quarterback over the years. But I liked his answer on the booing fans.
I mean, I'm not paying attention to it, but they should be booing, right? It's exactly what I just said. We didn't play well on offense.
I like that answer. Good for you.
He could always give them the thumbs down. It's in New York.
Yes. Marty's going
to go Mets.
Let's go talk to the guys in the Mets clubhouse and see the best way to handle it. Similar fans, though. Same fans.
Exactly.
They're
the same.
Mets and Jets fans are mostly the same people. They should be booing, though. I mean, after watching him lose, didn't he lose to Carolina last week?
Yeah,
didn't he lose
Sam.
Literally to Sam Darnold? Yeah. And then Darnold was really good yesterday, threw for over 300 yards as they beat New Orleans. So the quarterback carousel deal in New York, go figure, is not working out for the Jets. That's not the first time we've said that. And then one of my favorite players in the league had a really good first half yesterday. That's Tyrod Taylor. I love Tyrod Taylor. Most criminally underrated. I love Tyrod Taylor.
But something always happens to the poor guy.
It's just can't
sad.
Get a break.
Yeah, he didn't end up finishing the game. Maura, I think you made this up on the sheet. Davis Mills, not a real person.
I think he is. I think he played in the Pac-12.
I don't think so. I think you made that up. And I think it's a little rude of you and kind of mean, underhanded, to start making up names and putting them on my show
sheet. Just to see if you'll Ron Burgundy them.
There's a decent chance I will. Who's Davis Mills? He played at Stanford?
Yeah, I guess he was their third-round draft pick this year.
They spent a third-round draft pick on a guy named Davis Mills? Mm-hmm. All right. Well, in 5 years, as we're sitting here talking about Davis Mills winning his third straight Super Bowl, we can go back to today, and I will take the L for sure on that one. Anyway, I do love Tyrod Taylor. I just wish good things on that guy. Late-round pick. Do you remember when Jake Locker was here, he did that special on ESPN, the Path to the Draft thing? Do you remember that? It was like Jake Locker hanging out with his dad, and It focused on three people. One was Jake Locker. One was Cam Newton, who afterwards I came away liking so much more than I did before. To this day, I root for Cam Newton pretty much because of that. And the third was Tyrod Taylor. It was like two studs and this other guy. And Taylor, they just showed him constantly just busting his butt, working hard and everything he was doing to try to get noticed. And so I've kind of rooted for him and followed him. He was backing up in Baltimore, right? And then he went to Buffalo and San Diego.
Cleveland.
He's been everywhere. And he's starting the year in Houston, was actually playing pretty darn well, and unfortunately now he's hurt. Maybe that's just sort of where he's at. All right, here's maybe the biggest story on here, and I want to make sure we get to it. Richard Sherman rumors continue. So let me read you this clip from NFL Network. Say multiple teams are interested, the Bucs, the 49ers. We've heard the Seahawks may be in this group also. But here's what they said. A person close to Sherman said he's been doing magnetic therapy and speaking with a therapist since the incident, helping him work through many issues he didn't have the tools to address before. Good. Sherman's back to his old Seattle playing weight of 195 pounds and expects to be on the field at some point in 2021. The NFL generally doesn't hand down discipline until the legal process is complete, meaning Sherman likely would be free to play immediately. I'm not sure I believe that last part.
I didn't know that.
Well, that's also just not entirely true. We've seen them give out penalties long before legal action. So I feel like that's not true, but all right. First of all, the good news. I'm glad. I'm glad Sherm is getting the help he needs. I don't know what magnetic therapy is, but if it's working for him, great. I'm glad he's speaking with a therapist. I'm glad, and I think this is well said, that he's getting himself the tools to deal with it himself. That's really important, and his mental health should be first and foremost here, along with the accountability for what happened. They can go hand in hand. I can feel sympathy for Richard Sherman and want him to get the help he needs, and also know that he needs to be held accountable for actions he took that put people's lives in danger. Those things can be true at the same time, and in fact, I believe they are. But you got multiple teams interested. The Bucks, the Niners. Should the Seahawks be on the list? As you watched Trey Flowers yesterday, how can the Seahawks not be on the list?
Yeah.
I'm not saying Sherm's the answer to your prayers, but should you be part of the conversation? Yeah, I'm not willing to say go get him yet.
I'm just not sure. I saw someone say, like, Flowers is awful, bring back Sherm. I'm not sure fans realize that. I don't think he's exact. He's not the Sherm that left here.
Definitely not.
He may have, just because of how veteran savvy he is, he may have done better yesterday. But
yes.
I think still would have had his moments where he would have gotten smoked on some of those.
But no one's asking him to be Richard Sherman from 2015.
Yeah.
You're saying be better than Trey Flowers. That's all.
Yeah.
We're saying be better than Trey Flowers.
As far as the legal thing, also here to note, Frank Clark got pulled over with an Uzi in his backseat this offseason. He's playing right now.
That's true.
Because nothing's come to fruition legally with that yet.
I feel like Frank should stop driving around with Uzis.
A lot of things Frank should stop doing.
Yeah, that's on the list. All right, that's a trip around the NFL. I'm open to the Sherm conversation. I'm not banging the drum for it, so to speak, but I'm certainly open to it. Yeah, I think they should talk to him. He's better. He doesn't have to be great. He's going to be better than Trey Flowers. That's it. Now, maybe Sidney Jones is going to end up being the answer to the prayers here, and we can ask Pete where he's at. In fact, that's on my list of questions for him at 9:30 this morning. But, I think you got to at least find out where Sherm's at. What did you think of taunting on DJ Reed?
Losing my mind still.
Why?
I don't understand. Okay, I need to calm down first. I'm going to do my magnetic therapy.
Oh.
How do you deprogram your entire playing career of being an intimidating, physical, dominating force and turn that off the second that you just showed it?
All right, well, hold on. Let me pick this apart because I want to be very clear on my thoughts here. First of all, they got the call right. It's a bad rule, and we can talk about the silliness of this rule, but it was called correctly. That is absolutely, according to what the NFL is now calling taunting, that was taunting. But let me be clear. I don't think DJ Reed's ever physically intimidated anybody in his life. So saying that he needs to deprogram his physical intimidation, that guy's like 5'7".
Okay, then DK.
Well, that one's maybe more true. Maybe done a little bit more physical intimidation. I don't know. I saw people. Go ahead.
I use this example in already to you guys. It's like changing the speed limit on the road that you learned how to drive on, and now there's a cop at every 100 feet who is enforcing the rule to the 1 mile per hour.
Mm-hmm.
It is so hard. I can't imagine.
Well, hold on. But haven't you ever driven through a school zone and you know that there are going to be, there's going to be a police officer?
Yeah, the school
here.
Zone's been there my entire driving career. It's my whole life.
But sometimes there's a new school zone. It's not like you weren't given warning that it's there. It's on your drive to work. You've driven by it 3 times and they've put up giant signs that say, hey, well, there's now a school zone here, strictly enforced. There's a cop here for the last 3 days. You don't know now on day 4 to stop for the cop?
Okay, maybe that example is not the best example I could have used.
Maybe because it's a very good example. You're absolutely right.
I don't disagree that he didn't taunt, because you're right. According to the rule, that is exactly a taunt. But there's not a fan on earth who thinks football will be more fun if wide receivers and cornerbacks can't smack talk each other.
Well, that's a different conversation.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's arguing that.
I 100% agree with you. The NFL has this wrong, but the referee yesterday had it right. And I know that's a hard thing to process. It's a lot like the tuck rule. And I know it's like now going on, 20-something years since the tuck rule, but it's the same thing. The tuck rule was absolutely called correctly. I'm sorry, Charles Woodson. I'm sorry, Amy Trask. I'm sorry, the entire Raiders organization. That is the letter of that law. It is the dumbest rule I've ever conceived. It's dumber than this rule. The tuck rule is ridiculous. It makes no sense whatsoever. It is clearly a fumble according to anybody's eyes who've ever watched football. But for whatever reason, there is a silly rule in the book that Walt Coleman got correct that day. That is a tuck. He was tucking the ball, and therefore, it's not a fumble. If DJ Reed just turns around and does the exact same thing to the crowd, to his fans, to his friends, to his teammates, to anybody other than the receiver, there's no penalty.
Right.
And you know how I know this? Because Al Woods did it on the next play, 2 plays later. huge sack, big moment in the game at the time, celebrated and was just as physically intimidating as DJ Reed, maybe even a hair more so because of, you know, his giant girth.
Size.
No penalty. They are telling you specifically, don't taunt. That's all. Don't do it at the other team. Do I agree with it? Not really. But I understand that the goal here is celebrate, don't make it personal. And what they're trying to avoid is just some of the fighting that comes out of that. They're saying we want the celebration. They're allowing the entire team to pose together after an interception or a fumble. They're allowing celebrations in the end zone. You can do the bye-bye-bye if you want. The only thing they're saying you can't do is this one thing. And he did it. He did it.
I just don't want to see it in such high leverage situation. Could you imagine a Super Bowl taunting call?
Yes.
Ugh.
I absolutely can, because they're telling you specifically, don't do this.
I mean, Antoine Winfield Jr. did it to Tyreek Hill last year, which is actually a revenge one, because Tyreek Hill had done it earlier in the season. But this year, they would call that.
Yes. They've made this pretty darn... Yes, Lamar Jackson did a cartwheel into the end zone. No taunting. He didn't do it at anybody. Like, I understand this is frustrating, but it's really not that complicated. Are we really sitting here going to say that those are the same thing? I understand to our eyes they look very similar, but the NFL is pretty clear on it. Celebrate however you want, unless you do it at somebody. And if Lamar Jackson had gone over to an opponent and done a backflip while staring him down, he'd have gotten a penalty.
Yeah.
But because he's celebrating rather than taunting, they're just making a clear difference between the two.
And being at the game, I was like, he must have said something, because I'm 300 level, man. I'll be here with my people.
He looked right at him.
But
I
was like, maybe he said something that I couldn't hear or couldn't see. And then I watched the replay at home and I was like, that's it.
Yes. He looks right at him, gives him can't do that anymore.
I know. And the ball was overthrown, too.
And by the way, what a stupid rule. Like, I'm right there with you. It's ridiculous. But them's the rules, man. And and that was not the worst penalty on the Seahawks.
No.
I mean, Jamal Adams, absolutely worse with allowing that drive to continue with the push on the quarterback. That was a bad penalty. I mean, well called. It was a dumb penalty is what I mean. Same with on the sideline. That was clearly a late hit. Like, yeah, the Seahawks got some breaks in this game, but I don't know. I did not think the refs had it out for the Seahawks yesterday. I thought it was actually called pretty darn well, according to the letter of the law. All right, we've gone through this game, and unfortunately, the biggest culprit is not necessarily the biggest worry. That's next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.